From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
A report came out today. It's over 300 pages. It's a historic document. It's not a political document. It was a document designed to get to the truth.
That was Congressman Michael McCaul about an hour ago. He's the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, announcing the release of an explosive 350-plus page investigation into the Biden administration's disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan. Welcome to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us today. We're going to get more from North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer, member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, in just a moment. Well, Congress is back today for a a three-week sprint through the remainder of September, with just 57 days until the November election. Top of the list of items to do is a short-term government funding bill to avert a shutdown going into the election.
Keeping the government open will require bipartisanship. Keeping the government open will mean no poison pills or reckless partisan posturing. And keeping the government open will mean tuning out the bully tactics of the hard right. Sadly, our House Republican counterparts are not off to a promising start.
That, of course, was the Senate scare leader Chuck Schumer. We're going to find out what the House is planning when we talk to the House Majority Leader Steve Scalise later on this edition of Washington Watch. By the way, it's good to be back behind the microphone here in the Washington Watch studio. I appreciate Jody Heiss and Joseph Backholm filling in for me during the month of August as I traveled and spoke in various states. In fact, this weekend, I was in Missouri for a culture impact conference outside of Springfield, and then Sunday, Fellowship Family Church in Greenwood, which is just outside of Kansas City, where Pastor Chris Williams is doing a great job. I was able to visit with many, many Washington Watch listeners across Missouri. Shout out to all those bot radio listeners in Missouri. I was there because they are one of 10 states where Planned Parenthood and other abortion-promoting organizations are pushing measures to eradicate pro-life and pro-family laws. They're being a bit deceptive in what they're talking about. Well, the abortion crowd, as a result, suffered a setback this weekend in Missouri. Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey joins us later with the details. As I mentioned, there are nine other states in addition to Missouri. The Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council, Travis Weber, is going to join me to discuss those states and what you need to know about the ballot initiatives in order to protect life, parental rights, and in some cases, children, from the insidious agenda of the transgender movement. That's coming up later on Washington Watch. All of that and a bit more on this September 9th edition of Washington Watch. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. As always, resources there for you. And by the way, make your plans now to join us for the Pray Vote Stand Summit October the 3rd through the 6th right here in Washington, D.C. To find out more, visit PrayVoteStand.org. You can find out details and you can register. PrayVoteStand.org. As I mentioned earlier today, House Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Michael McCaul released the majority report on their three-year investigation into the Biden-Harris administration's disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan and the chaos and the instability that followed. The investigation revealed five primary conclusions, including how U.S. national security was degraded in the aftermath of withdrawal if Afghanistan has once again become a haven for terrorists. Joining me now to discuss this is U.S. Senator Kevin Cramer of North Dakota. He serves on the Senate Armed Services Committee. Senator Cramer, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
It's great to see you. Thanks, Tony, as always.
You've been outspoken on this. As a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, you've watched in disbelief what the administration did in the withdrawal from Afghanistan. Your thoughts on this report?
Well, first of all, it wasn't surprising to me, but it was very well done. It's very thorough. It, as you know, interviewed lots of people from the military, former military leaders, as well as members of the Biden administration. But remember, it was Robert Gates, the former Secretary of Defense under Barack Obama, who said that for 40 years, Joe Biden was wrong nearly every time when it came to major policies on foreign relations or national security. And he was certainly wrong on the Afghan withdrawal, not on the principle of getting out of Afghanistan, But the way he went about it, ignoring the Doha conditions that the Taliban had agreed to with President Trump, to ignore all that. But here's what bothers me the most from my perch on the Armed Services Committee, Tony, is that it really began the decline of America's reputation in the world. And we've never restored it. It's why every despot and dictator and communist leader in the world has felt compelled to start wars and to attack our friends in Israel, to attack our friends in Ukraine, to attack American military in the Red Sea and in Iraq. And that projection of weakness, that reputational harm that happened with the withdrawal of Afghanistan is exactly what we're struggling with now, the consequences of that.
I mean, if you were to plot this out on a timeline, you see the withdrawal from Afghanistan, you see Russia making a move on Ukraine, you see Iran and its proxies moving on Israel, you see the saber rattling with China. So there clearly is a connection. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to try to defend this as being a decision, an action that was done in isolation with no other consequences involved.
No question, Tony. Perfectly said. And here's the other thing. That same message that goes to our adversaries goes to our allies. If you're an ally of the United States and you see what we did to the non-combatant Afghans, their leadership was pleading with us to not do it the way Joe Biden did it, as were our allies around the world, as were, by the way, the generals. I mean, General McKenzie was the CENTCOM commander at the time. He had all he could do to not just completely verbally go against President Biden while he was still under his command. So there were a lot of signals, but the signals to our allies that we're not a reliable leader, we're not a reliable partner, not a reliable friend, that also is an important message that's gone out to the world. And it's another reason why we need new leadership, frankly, in the White House.
Senator Cramer, let me go back to the issue at hand with just Afghanistan, just focusing on that, why we went into Afghanistan two decades ago because of the threat of terrorism. Yes. Now we see the reports up to 10 terrorist training camps back in the region again. We've had those that have been set free, actually detained in our own country, who have come across our southern border. Is the latter worse than the former? When we look at what the situation was 20 years ago and now what it is today, after we spilled American blood and spent American resources there in Afghanistan.
So, Tony, this is a really important conversation that a lot of us have to have, even within ourselves, right, within our own brains, with fellow conservatives. What is the appropriate role? But the one thing I would say, when you compare those 20 years ago to today and all the consequences, withdrawing completely from the world is not the way the leader of the free world should do it. Nor can we be the policemen of every part of the world at the same time. We need each other. We need allies. But we need to do it the right way. And I think to the point of a safe haven for terrorism to gather and to plan their next attack, even on our soil, we shouldn't forget that there are hotspots in the Middle East that require at least a watchful eye. Right now in Afghanistan, it's not just a matter of us not being present there. We don't have a great view of Afghanistan, what the Taliban is up to. And so somewhere there's a balance there, policy right. Balance for sure, Tony. But you raise really the fundamental point to Afghanistan, and that is, do we want to maintain a safe haven for terrorism, or do we want to have a relationship that's built on trust?
Senator, I think you and I probably share a very similar view on this. I call myself a rational isolationist. I don't want to get involved in other people's fights. As Proverbs right. says, don't take a dog, don't get involved in somebody else's business. It's like taking a dog by the ears. And I don't think we need to get involved in those things unless it threatens American security. Right. And I do think there was justification initially for going into Afghanistan, but the purpose and the end objective, I think this idea of nation building was a failed idea and something we need to stay out of. I do think you're absolutely right. When America is threatened, we need to deal with it forcefully, swiftly, and decisively.
Yeah. No, Tony, that's a great point. And the other thing we need to do is what you and I are doing. We need to talk about it. I think what happens too often is we go, we take on the enemy. We create a safety, you know, a safe place, if you will. And then we fail to talk to the American people, whether we're the commander-in-chief or the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff or, you know, key members of Congress. If we're going to stay in a country like Afghanistan or Iraq or other places, we need to be in constant, regular communication with the American people as to why we're there. What is the mission? Are we accomplishing anything? What's the exit plan? And I think our politicians for too long haven't been as communicative and as forthcoming as they ought to be. So it's a number of things. And you're right. The fundamental, though, standard ought to be, what's the threat to the American public? I'd much rather fight terrorists in the Middle East than fight them here on our homeland. But we better make the case.
Agreed. Absolutely agree. I hope that this report will not only just expose what the Biden administration did in a disastrous pullout, but there were decisions prior to them that got us into Afghanistan. And with no clear path forward, it was, you know, how do you get out of here? There was no plan to that. Obviously, that's disastrous. But I hope that we'll take this report in its totality and think through our next foreign policy move in terms of our military intervention.
No, that's exactly right, Tony. It should inform all of us as policymakers, as administrators, as a military, but also our allies. And therein, I think, lies sometimes a bit of the problem. Too many times, America looks to be not necessarily going it alone, but carrying the bulk of the burden. And we do it a little bit too willingly sometimes, and we need to share this burden. One thing that we're seeing that's being clarified in the last few years, of course, is that there are friends and there are enemies. And then there are some frenemies. And it's important to know which ones are which, and then to work with our friends to make sure that we're making more friends and that we don't isolate ourselves. But because remember, our enemies are becoming allies with each other now. It used to be we could take these enemies on one at a time. That's no longer the case. So it's a much more complicated geopolitical situation. But at the end of the day, it still has to become about what's best for the United States of America and our citizens.
Senator Kramer, final question for you. You sit on the Armed Services Committee. Is it not true that we would have less global intervention necessary if we had a strong military that was focused on its mission that would keep the enemies at bay because they know that we have lethal, decisive leadership that is going to take them on if they cross a line?
There's no question, Tony. You know, a lot of times the left will make fun of Donald Trump because he somehow gets along well with, you know, Vladimir Putin or Kim Jong-un or, you know, name your despot. The reality is they respected him. They feared him. So they stayed in their lane. And the projection of power and the reputation of the United States is built on strength. Ronald Reagan, in my view, the greatest president of my lifetime, led by being strong. And the whole point of our military ought to be to deter our enemies. Fight them if necessary, win for sure, but deter them from ever wanting to take us on. And we've been taking a peace dividend for an awfully long time and been, you know, not as focused as we ought to be on it. And we need to get back to that peace through strength, you know, aspect that Ronald Reagan was so good at.
It worked.
At articulating.
It worked. It absolutely worked. My entire time in the Marine Corps, we had no foreign conflicts. So, I mean, it works. And I was in during the Reagan administration. Senator Kramer, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Always my pleasure. Thank you, Tony.
All right. Kevin Kramer, Senator of North Dakota. All right. When we come back, I spent the weekend in Missouri for a reason. Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey joins us with that reason next.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Welcome back to this Monday edition of Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. Well, over the weekend, I was in Missouri speaking and preaching with a focus on the proposed abortion amendment that was slated to be on the state ballot in November. Now, the ballot measure, Amendment 3, would not only constitutionalize abortion until birth, but would sever parental rights over sexual issues, including gender transitions, surgeries for minors, and possibly even dealing with sex education in the schools. I mean, it's really a far-reaching amendment. Well, on Friday night, as I was heading into our first event, where I actually had dinner with Rich Bott of Bott Radio Network, lots of Washington Watch listeners there in Missouri, also Senator Josh Hawley, Stephen Crowder, who was organizing this event, and Pastor Chris Williams, who I was with, a lot of great, great folks there. Well, anyway, as we were headed into that dinner, a judge ruled that the ballot measure was invalid, teeing up an expected final decision tomorrow by the Missouri Supreme Court. It got kicked to the appellate court, then all the way up to the Supreme Court of the state. But that's not the latest. There's a little bit more. And here now to give us an update on this fight for life and parental rights in Missouri is the Attorney General of the state of Missouri, Andrew Bailey. General Bailey, welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So I understand there's another update that broke just today. Tell us about it.
Yeah, look, the trial court judge ruled that the proponents of this dangerous amendment to our state constitution failed in a blatant violation of the law to enumerate all of the sediment of law that has built up to protect life and protect women and children over the past 200 years of the history of the state of Missouri. And tomorrow morning at the Missouri Supreme Court, the court will hear oral argument on whether or not the trial court got it right, the correctness of the trial court judgment. And I'm here to tell you, at the Missouri Attorney General's office, we're going to march into the Supreme Court building tomorrow and argue that the Supreme Court should affirm the trial court order. The people of the state of Missouri are being sold a bill of goods, and it is a blatant violation of the law, as the judge identified, to fail to notify the people of the state of all of the statutory provisions that this dangerous amendment seeks to overturn.
So in Missouri, the law requires, as I understand it, and you would know you're the Attorney General, but it's required that an amendment deals, number one, with a single issue, and it has to inform the voters on what laws are being usurped or what laws are being removed. And this is a very deceptively worded amendment that just says it basically leaves the door wide open, saying that reproductive rights include such things as, but leaves a whole lot of other things unenumerated.
Yeah, that's precisely right. And the whole idea is to protect the voting public so they can understand what exactly policy positions are being adopted in this constitutional amendment, rather than leaving it vague and letting subsequent courts and subsequent generations and jurisdictions work through that. We need to know up front what we're voting for. And the people of the state of Missouri, again, have been lied to by the proponents of this dangerous amendment. The proponents of the amendment would tell you that it's merely restoring the framework that existed under Roe v. Wade. And that is a lie. That is absolutely not true. This will turn Missouri into the state of California or worse by getting the government out of any kind of safety control or regulation when it comes to the health of women and children. And certainly the General Assembly just recently enacted a ban on the gender mutilation of youth here in the state of Missouri. And that would overturn that statute and so many others. And so, again, it's a fairness due process issue that the voting public needs to have that clarity. And the proponents of this amendment have not done that.
So let me ask you a little bit about this, General Bailey, because I know you have been working and investigating actually what's been happening in these gender transition clinics where minors have been targeted. So you know this issue quite well. This, the way it's worded, very wide open in terms of reproductive freedoms. I talk about abortion. Abortion is just one element of reproductive freedom. This could include, as I read it, and it's open to court interpretation, so I think that this is a justifiable reading of it, that sex education could be included in this, that parents would not have a right. This would be in the Constitution. Parents would not have a right to object to pornographic sex ed material or material that talks about homosexual behavior. I mean, there's so much that could be stuffed into this that it's wide open.
It is absolutely wide open, and it's dangerous, and it's a lie. And you're exactly right. Currently in the state of Missouri, Section 170.015 gives parents the right to object to any sexually explicit curriculum in their school. That's an opt-in and opt-out procedure. The General Assembly has set contours and guardrails around what can be introduced in the sex ed programs in schools, and the parents have a chance to object and say, well, my kid's not going to participate, needs to be excused from that portion of the class. This would undo that and eliminate a parent's right to object to sexually explicit content or other education in the public school system that might not be consistent with the parents' values or consistent with objective reality for that matter.
Let's talk about the gender transition. I mean, this is something that you've been pursuing in the state, investigating. As you mentioned, the legislature, as a result, passed laws protecting minors. That could be simply erased with this amendment.
Yeah, that Senate Bill 49 was enacted in response to a clandestine and shadowy network of these clinics that were operating across the state of Missouri that the growth of this industry was exponential. And the harms that the children were suffering were severe. And a whistleblower had come forward that prompted my investigation, which resulted in legislative action. Senate Bill 49 was passed, and we successfully defended it in the trial court level against constitutional attack. And this constitutional amendment would undo that and return us to a world where children could go to these mutilation clinics and forever change their bodies without parental consent, without fully understanding the danger of undergoing these kinds of procedures.
So give us the process. Tomorrow, the state Supreme Court is going to hear the oral arguments, but they have, as I understand, they have a very short window in which to rule because the ballots have to be printed and sent out.
That's right. Tomorrow's the deadline. So the argument and the decision have to come very quickly. This is a very rapidly developing and fluid situation. But I'll tell you, my legal team worked through the weekend and is ready to go into court to defend the trial court order and protect life and parental rights in the state of Missouri.
Your sense of where the state Supreme Court, now each state is different. Missouri, the judges there are appointed. They're not elected. What's the sense of the makeup of the state Supreme Court?
Well, our Republican governor, Governor Parson, has appointed three new judges to that court and replacing three Democrat appointees. So I'm cautiously optimistic. At the end of the day, because of the short timeline, you know, one of the arguments to be made here is like the trial court heard the evidence and made a decision. If there's not enough information for the voting public, then if they want to get this initiative petition passed, they should come back and try to do it the right way next time. But why would we race through this and produce a bad result that's bad for the people of the state of Missouri?
That would forever be locked into the state constitution. You're right. Attorney General Andrew Bailey, always great to see you. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us. And once again, thanks for the great work you do there in Missouri.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate you.
All right. All right. After the break, we're going to actually look at these other nine states where voters will decide abortion referendums in November. So stick around. Travis Weber joins me next.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Well, this November, pro-life voters in 10 states will have the opportunity to make a stand for life when they cast their votes on ballot measures that seek to enshrine abortion in their state constitutions. Now, this is different. This is not pro-life measures being pushed, with the exception of one in Nebraska. All of them are being prompted by Planned Parenthood and other pro-abortion organizations. Now, these states, listen up. Missouri, Florida, Montana, South Dakota, Arizona, Nebraska, Colorado, Maryland, Nevada, and New York. Now, they're not all the same. They're not all the same. Some are reach farther than others, like the one we were talking about in Missouri. Missouri is actually one of the most far-reaching. In fact, I was looking for the language. I have it here now to kind of underscore what I was talking about with General Bailey. Here it is. I'm quoting, "The right to make and carry out decisions about all matters related to reproductive health care, including but not limited to prenatal care, childbirth, postpartum care, birth control, abortion care, miscarriage care, and respectful birthing conditions." All right. When you look at that, let me draw your attention to the language, including but not limited to. That means it could be anything. We know how loosely they play with definitions. I mean, male and female, that doesn't mean anything to them. So, in fact, when you talk about abortion being reproductive freedom, killing an unborn child is not freedom. I mean, that's not reproduction. That's destruction. Maybe destructive freedom is what they should call it. Anyway, you need to be aware, and you need to do something that some politicians are not willing to do, and that is talk about these things and be willing to take a stand for life. I don't care what state you're in. The sanctity of human life doesn't stop at the border of a state. If we're going to be a pro-life nation, we need to be a pro-life nation, and we need to advocate in our state and across this country to protect unborn children. All right, well, joining me now to talk about these 10 ballot initiatives that will be in the states that we listed is Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, so why don't you go through these and kind of highlights Arizona. What should voters be looking for there?
Yes, as you mentioned, you went through the states and described where these are coming up. Arizona, here we're going to see a proposed amendment to the state constitution providing a fundamental right to abortion. The state cannot interfere with before viability. Arizona current law is at 15 weeks protection. So basically this would take some protections and roll them back to have far fewer protections after such an amendment to the state constitution is enacted, assuming that doesn't get interpreted by courts, as we've been discussing, in ways that are even more vague. So that's the situation in Arizona. We see, if you look at the other states, you can kind of see different.
Let me stop you on one major point, is that these, unlike the pro-life measures that are currently in these states, those are statutory. This is constitutional. So this is putting a fundamental right to abortion in the state constitution.
Yes, that's right, Tony. We're seeing a number of these proposed amendments to constitutions in different ways that they're putting before the citizens. In New York's case, it's amending the state's Bill of Rights. And elsewhere, you know, they're mostly looking at the state constitution. So the exact specifics differ, but you're correct.
So if something is a constitutional right in a state, then a statutory provision that the legislature may pass is going to be heavily scrutinized by the courts if it's challenged, if it interferes with that right.
Right. Some of this is going to be left up to court interpretation, but a state constitution is going to trump any other provision of state law in essence. Even if there's an issue of federal law, depending on what the issue is, a state law may trump it. But a state constitution is going to trump a state statute if the point is the same one, if it's on the same area. If it's a different area, it'll be scrutinized by courts, and certainly abortion litigation groups are going to get in there and argue for abortion.
Let's take a few examples of pro-life statutory law that's been passed over the last 40 years. We have issues like informed consent, that a woman has to be informed of what an abortion does, the fact that it's a child. We have some laws in some states that require them to see a sonogram, a picture of the unborn child. What happens to those?
Yeah, I think the simplest answer to this is it's going to depend on how courts interpret these various provisions of law in regard to whether the unborn, that unborn baby has the right to continue living. And it's a shameful way to put it that way, but that's the truth. The courts are deciding whether...
But when that is not in the Constitution, that right to life, which is why we've been advocating for a federal human life amendment, that's the Constitution, as it's been interpreted, is silent on that.
That's right. And this is all going back to Roe, right? The whole... Even by non-pro-lifers, many criticize the decisioning in Roe versus Wade as flimsy, without legal basis. And we know the Dobbs decision overturned Roe, threw it out, which returned this issue to the voters and to the states, voters at the federal level and the state level. Now, the battleground, we can see the spiritual response from the culture of death and the spiritual forces behind that culture. Their response is to push abortion. Even since the midterms, we saw seven referenda on this issue go to votes in the states and fail. In Kansas, California, Vermont, Michigan, Montana, Kentucky, two pro-life provisions fail there, and then Ohio enshrining abortion into their constitution. So we saw a wave sweeping across. Now we're seeing 10 states, 11 measures, as you referenced, coming up in a few months on the same issue. So we're seeing a wave sweep. And so it's important for believers to understand this, look at their own individual state, but understand the larger spiritual dynamic.
And this could be worse than what it was before the Dobbs decision.
If the people do not take, we need to be asking the Lord to intervene, and we need to be taking action.
We need to pray, we need to vote, and we need to stand.
We do.
Travis Weber, thanks for joining
us. Thank you.
Folks, be praying. We're going to talk a lot more about this in the next several weeks. Don't go away. More Washington Watch straight ahead.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
I'm Tony Perkins, and this is Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Monday. It's good to be back behind the microphone again. I want to thank Jody and Joseph for filling in for me here on Washington Watch while I was out during the month doing various things, traveling around the country. All right, make your plans now to join us for this year's Pray Vote Stand Summit here in our nation's capital. There's no other event like it. As we look not just at the political and the policy, but the spiritual, we pray. And we talk about what we need to do to vote and how we need to get others to vote. And then we're committed and we encourage one another to stand for biblical truth. So to find out more, go to prayvotestand.org. Our word for today comes from Proverbs 24, verse 10. If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. In other words, if you go to pieces when trouble comes, you'll be of little use. So how do you prepare for the day of adversity, the day of trouble? You act. Number one, acknowledge the Lord. We cannot stand in our own strength. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. In Ephesians 6, it says, finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and the power of his might. Secondly, we need to create a plan. Plan provides focus and reduces anxiety. Nehemiah is an excellent example of planning. And then take action. Don't stand around. Do something. In Exodus 14, 15, the Lord said to Moses as they were standing looking at the Red Sea, why do you cry out to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward. So how do you prepare for the day of adversity? Act. Acknowledge the Lord. Make a plan and then move out. To join me on our daily journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. All right, we're going to be joined here in just a moment by the Republican Majority Leader in the House, Steve Scalise, but I want to go back and just kind of maybe put a bow on that conversation I was having with Travis. I cannot overemphasize how important it is that you're informed and voting and talking to your friends about it. Don't be silent. It's very important that these pro-abortion amendments are defeated in these 10 states. All right, and we're going to have more information in the weeks ahead, but you need to call your friends. You need to talk about this at church. You need to, your small groups, your pastor. Pastor, if you're a pastor, you need to talk about it. These issues are extremely, extremely important. Arizona, Colorado, Florida, Maryland, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New York, South Dakota. I was thinking about this as Travis was in here talking. It reminds me of a passage of Scripture in Matthew chapter 12, verse 43. When an unclean spirit goes out of a man, he goes through dry places seeking rest and finds none. Then he says, I will return to my house from which I came. And when he comes, he finds it empty, swept, and put in order. Then he goes and takes with him seven other spirits more wicked than himself, and they enter and dwell there. And the last state of that man is worse than the first. So shall it also be with this wicked generation. You know, the Dobbs decision throughout Roe, 50 years of this forced abortion policy on this nation, swept the house, cleaned it, bound it, got rid of it. But now we have leaders running from this issue and making apologies for it. The latter could be worse than the former. And it's because we've already seen this in several states, Ohio, Michigan, Kansas, where the pro-abortion crowd was able to get amendments through to put this into those state ballots, overriding decades of pro-life laws. It's extremely, extremely important that we are informed, we're engaged, meaning that not only are we registered to vote, but we're registering friends and family, we're informing them, and we're encouraging them to go vote. And by the way, we talk about vote, we've got not just these 10 states that have amendments on the ballot, but we've got a presidential election, we've got congressional elections, we have state legislative elections, we have statewide elections, we have governors, we have attorney generals, Secretary of States, those who oversee elections in the states. So you cannot sit this out. Right? You cannot sit this election out. I know it's a little disturbing when you see the two parties. You got the Democratic Party that's all in for abortion, and now you see the Republicans kind of, it's just become very murky on where they stand on the recent party platform. I made no secret about that. We talked about that extensively. But I'm still voting, and I'm going to vote for the party and for the candidate that most closely aligns with biblical truth. Doesn't mean I'm going to be happy about where those parties are. But don't get distracted by someone at the top of the ticket that's not as close as someone on your school board or someone in your state legislature. We would not have had the overturn of Roe had it not been for state legislative bodies that over the last 15 years aggressively began to push pro-life legislation. And of course, Mississippi was the one that first got a case all the way to the Supreme Court, the Dobbs decision, the Dobbs case, which overturned Roe. So do not get distracted. Do not get discouraged. Don't allow people to persuade you not to vote because we don't have the perfect candidate at the top of the ticket. Vote. Be informed. We're going to have plenty of resources for you. Voter guides, where you can get your personalized voter guide. And you'll be able to know who's on the ballot, how they're rated, and you can go out and vote. So this is an extremely, extremely important election. Pray. Pray, vote, and stand. Okay? Got it? Three things. Pray, vote, stand. Repeat that with me. Pray, vote, stand. All right. Okay, Congress is back in session, but only for 3 weeks because they're going away again at the end of the month leading up to the election day. Now they're going to be back out there campaigning as we move into November. Now the most pressing task will be a bill that will fund government past the September 30th fiscal year end. So this is critical because if you don't have one, you have yet more debate about a government shutdown. But there's also more that Congress will be tackling in the weeks ahead. And there's going to be some measures reportedly attached to the temporary funding bill called a continuing resolution. Now, we're just about to get the majority leader. I think all right, we're still waiting on Steve Scalise to join us. This next 3 weeks, as I said, is going to be a sprint. So we're going to be covering a lot in the next few weeks as we move toward the election. One of the issues that is going to be attached, reportedly, based on my conversations with Republican leadership, is the Save Act, which is what prohibits those who are in this country illegally from voting in federal elections. Now, the Democrats say it's not needed, that the law already prohibits it. If that's the case, why don't they just go ahead and accept it and make it very clear that they are against illegal voting? But they don't want to do that. We also have a measure that will be voted on. We talked, this was talked about last week. I talked about it over the weekend on This Week on the Hill. And that is a bill dealing with the WHO, the World Health Organization, and their Global Pandemic Accord, which this bill by Congressman Tiffany would require that the Senate sign off on any agreement that the Biden administration makes with the World Health Organization. All right, joining me now to talk all about all of this and more is the Majority Leader of the House of Representatives, Steve Scalise, who represents the 1st Congressional District of Louisiana. Leader Scalise, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
Tony, great to be back with you.
Hope you're doing well. I know you you had some major surgery over the break, and you look like you're doing well.
Yeah, I've been needing to get a new hip for over a year related to the shooting in 2017. You know, all the cartilage had basically gone away, and I've been walking bone on bone. And as you can imagine, that's not fun. And it's been rough for a while. But, you know, we finally made it happen. It took a few weeks of recovery, but I feel great now. I can walk with no pain. I mean, it's really like night and day. So I'm very blessed. A lot of prayers. I appreciate it. Feel great.
Well, good. Does that mean you're going to be back at shortstop?
You know, we'll see how fast I can run. I'm not going to be breaking any records soon, but I can move a lot better.
All right. Well, we're grateful and thankful to the Lord for your recovery, speedy recovery. And I know this is a big help because I can see the pain was pretty intense. Let's start with the big one, and that is the continuing resolution to fund government past the election. What's the plan?
You know, we had passed the SAVE Act months ago, and this is a bill that says if you want to register to vote, you got to prove your citizenship. And we know now, as Biden and Harris have let tens plus million people into our country, they're now actually trying to go and aggressively recruit and sign them up to vote in a number of states. And there are a number of states that prohibit you from even requiring a CID to prove that they're a citizen. And so you've got illegals registering to vote already before this election, the most critical election in our life. And so we passed a bill to say you can't do that. You have to prove your citizenship so illegals can't go register to vote. And lo and behold, almost every Democrat voted no. Kamala Harris is against this. You know, I hope it comes up in the debate tomorrow night. You know, if President Trump says, Kamala, why do you want illegals to vote? Because you oppose the SAVE Act. So we're attaching that to the government funding bill.
Chuck Schumer says it's dead on arrival, says he's not going to deal with it. How strong will the House stand on this?
Well, you know, think about this, Tony. And I've been to a lot of congressional districts. Last week, I did a big West Coast swing. Even in California, you know, there's so many people fed up with the open borders because the crime that it's bringing alone in Los Angeles, San Francisco, you go to the East Coast, New York, everywhere you go, Denver. Look at what happened in Denver with, you know, gangs roving with AR-15s, taking over apartment complex. People are fed up. Democrats are fed up. And so we've seen polling on this. I mean, over 80% of Americans think it's crazy that illegals can vote. How's Chuck Schumer? Now, Chuck Schumer's in New York. He can get away with it. But I'll tell you this, Tony. Chuck Schumer has a number of vulnerable Democrats that are on the ballot this election. How are they going to go back home and explain a no vote on that bill?
Well, I think that there are a lot of voters that vote for Republican candidates that are ready for Republicans to go toe-to-toe with Chuck Schumer.
Well, we're ready because Chuck is out of touch with most voters in America. And look, again, maybe he's in touch with New York voters, but he is the majority leader of the Senate. He represents all Democrats in the Senate, and most of them come from states where their voters actually want us to pass this bill.
I think with all the squealing we've been hearing out of New York about the immigrants coming into that state, into the city of New York, I think there's a lot of people that disagree with Chuck Schumer there.
Well, look, Lee Zeldin almost got elected as a Republican governor of the state of New York last year on the issue of crime and border security. And I went and campaigned with Lee. You know, there were rallies. We went to a rally with over 3,000 people for a Republican running for governor in New York. And that just goes to show you, you know, there are a lot of Democrats that crossed over and said, we're done. We're done with this open border, crazy spending, high inflation Democrat Party. And that's who Chuck Schumer is.
So, Steve, let's talk about some of the other measures that we'll be looking at in this sprint in the next 3 weeks before the House leaves to go back to the campaign trail. What else are we going to be seeing in the next few weeks?
One of the bills, Tony, deals with what we're seeing in a lot of states where the CCP-related companies are going and buying up farmland in America. This is a big food security threat to our country.
That's the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP. That's the Chinese buying up American farmland?
In big swaths, you know, massive amount of acres in a lot of states. And a couple of states have actually passed laws to prohibit it in that state. But of course, it's still happening in many, many other states. In some cases, they go buy farmland next to a military base, in a secure military base where you've got classified things going on. And then they start spying on that military base, Tony. It's going on in a number of states. We've identified it. Some people have been arrested. But at the end of the day, they're right now legally able to buy that land, and they're doing it. And it's a security threat to our nation, to our food supply. So ultimately, we're bringing a bill to block that. We're bringing another bill. You know, you've seen these crazy EV tax credits. I'm against all the EV tax credits. You know, $7,500 of your taxpayer money goes to help somebody buy an EV. Well, one of the things that we all know, over 90% of the batteries that run those EVs are made in China. This isn't American-made stuff. They're trying to mandate EVs, kill the fossil fuel auto industry, which is American-made cars that everybody loves, by the way. And reverse it and go to these Chinese made. So what we did is tied it to a list of countries that are threats to America. There's only four countries on that list. You've got China, North Korea, Iran, and Russia. No good friends of ours, Tony. But China is, of course, the only one that's actually making most of these batteries. And so we just say, you can't use the EV credits for any of these countries that are threats to America. Let's see how they vote on that bill. I know where I am.
That makes perfect sense. So maybe it's out of place up there in Congress. I don't know. Let's talk about the World Health Organization very quickly, about a minute left. World Health Organization, no pandemic preparedness treaty without Senate approval?
Yeah, we saw the Biden administration really cozying up with the WHO during COVID. And WHO was not a friend. They were actually in bed with China. You know, you had the CCP telling WHO which edicts to come out with. Anytime anybody would dare mention the Wuhan lab, they would shut it down. The head of WHO was corrupt. I don't think we should be giving any money to the WHO. But at the end of the day, we shouldn't be entering into treaties with them without at least Senate approval.
Yeah.
And that would give you at least a buffer from some of the bad deals Biden wants to get into to go back to shutdowns.
Because it's a treaty. It's what it is. It's a treaty.
Yeah.
All right. The next 3 weeks going to be busy. And so we're going to have a lot to watch, a lot to talk about. Steve Scalise, always great to see you. Glad you're doing well. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, God bless you, Tony. Take care.
All right. Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana, the majority leader in the House. All right, folks, a lot going on here in our nation's capital, and we're going to be tracking a lot in the days ahead. But for today, that's all we have. So until next time, I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul, where he says, you've done everything you could do, and you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand. Well, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.